You're listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly pop cultural nostalgia podcast. I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez, and who might you be?
I'm your co-host, Alex Mitchell. Why are we doing NPR?
I don't know. Today? I don't think I was doing NPR.
I thought you were.
You were doing NPR. Quick thing. So if you want shirts, if that's your bag, Pod Brothers, as we said last week, no longer a thing. Just go to theobscuregentleman.com and, you know, you can buy your merch there.
You could buy Plain Zero shirts there, too.
Yes, as well as 12 for a penny. And, you know, maybe a few other things. So head there for merchandise.
Are you still doing commissions?
Yes, commissions are still open. Probably going to be having a summer sale soon. Look out for that. But if you want stuff drawn up, then you know what to do. Other than that, Patreon, all that stuff. We're sponsored by Serta Mattresses. No, we're not.
That'd be a good get.
That would be a weird get.
But it'd be a good
one. We talk about pop culture. Now we're going to sell you mattresses.
Okay. You can
aerospace
rest mattress on your
laurels.
You know, you could talk about Aardman because they do the sheep, right?
Your spine will feel good and get bent in half and all that stuff.
You can read comics while you're
I don't know,
your body contours to the
shape of the aerospace museum mattress or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how mattresses work. I'm not a scientist.
No.
So let's just jump.
Clearly, you're not.
That's true. That's true. Let's jump into this then.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I'm right with you, Red 3.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
Looks like Daddy's bringing home the barbecue.
These donuts are great.
I'd buy that for $1.
Oh! Dodson. Dodson. We've got Dodson here.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
All we had to do was follow the damn train, CJ.
It was me all along, Austin.
No! No!
If you want to say there's a big three of comics, there's Marvel, DC, and then Image. Image is kind of the underdog, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they're kind of the, they're technically indie. Technically. But at the same time,
they're big.
Yes.
For indie, they're big.
Their market share is kind of huge. It's sometimes at 15%, and it at times has come close to eclipsing. Well, one time it did eclipse DC.
Yeah.
That we'll get more into that. But as for being like the indie publisher, things have kind of changed, we will definitely get into that. And they're sort of the current way they're ran. But their history is kind of interesting. It was a big sort of risk, huge risk.
Yeah.
And I guess let's talk about that. Let's talk about this company that started as sort of a fuck you to the powers that be, and now has created some of the most iconic sort of, I don't want to say superheroes because some of them are superheroes, but some of them are just like properties.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, Walking Dead is currently
probably the biggest one right now.
Right now, it's currently probably one of the biggest IPs. It's 100th issue sold more than a lot of mainstream comics sold. It was like in the millions, which hasn't been done in a long ass fucking time.
That first print is that goes for a lot of money too.
Yeah,
because a lot of people were saying like comics aren't going to sell.
Well, and also that one also goes for a lot of money because at the time, of course, like the speculation boom was already over when Walking Dead 1 came out, and so people initially didn't snatch up number one. They just, it was like, oh, it's a zombie comic.
I wanted to ask you about that because when I was doing research for this, Jim Lee's one of the...
Okay, yeah, we'll get into the speculation boom and how Image might have fucked things up. The boom itself is an episode unto itself, which will be interesting to talk about. It's almost kind of like the franchise wars, the console wars we talked about.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's really important to the saga of Image and the story of Image. But going back, we already mentioned The Walking Dead, but going back to its roots, Image Comics started in 1992, and the reason why it started was during this period of time, comics were selling fucking crazy. The superstar artists were now garnering so much attention, and their books were selling well into the millions and millions. So you had people like Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, you know, X-Force and their X-Men books, and these are the highest-selling books of all time. No, like, they haven't been beaten since.
That's what I was going to ask. So that X-Men number one, the one with the Jim Lee one, right?
Yeah.
So that one is the number one selling comic of all time. That issue.
Of all time.
So
followed by, I believe, X-Force and then Spider-Man by Tom McFarlane.
Yeah. So is that because of the speculation boom and all that? All the people...
Interesting enough, this was during the sort of the beginning of the speculation boom.
So these were actually legitimately selling because people wanted to read them.
That mixed with also, this is when Marvel was like testing the waters of like how to like push comics out and how to inflate numbers.
Okay.
It was really early on, and this, it's kind of hilarious how this all started. It actually started with DC, but DC was doing the Superman, the Man of Steel, John Byrne run. And, I mean, the notion of variant cover wasn't really a thing until that. And, you know, so there was a special Man of Steel cover.
Now comics get, like, six.
Oh, no, it's become to a point where we're starting to reach, like, the speculation era again.
Okay.
And there's a lot of worry. But Marvel started, they were just like, okay, let's capitalize on this thing DC did, and let's try this. So they started pushing variants, they started pushing special edition covers. And while this was going on, comics were like at a height they hadn't been since the 70s during the crash. There was like a small, it's called the DC explosion that happened, or the implosion, as it came to be known. So you had, you had Todd McFarlane, you had Jim Lee, you had Rob Liefeld, Eric Larson. These guys were fucking huge. Like they were on all the, like a lot of X-Men titles, Mark Silvestri, and they were selling like hot. They were selling like hotter than anyone had ever before. And the thing is, like all these lucrative deals came, all these merchandising deals, all these things with their artwork, and they were technically freelancers, and they felt we're not being like paid.
They wanted their just due,
because they're figuring like, look, we're making this company so much money. Why aren't we getting a piece of that? Like, we're just getting paid our normal rates.
We were talking about Bill Finger a while back.
Yeah.
That kind of reminds me of that situation a
bit. Yeah. I mean, but... they're still getting credit, at least.
Yeah.
The thing is, they just feel that...
their work didn't... And their pay did not reflect each other.
Yeah. They felt like they were being robbed of, like, what they were due.
Yeah.
And so they were talking to the head of Malibu Comics at the time, which was another publisher. You know, they were sort of saying the grievances, like, I believe it was Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane, and I think Rob Liefeld and Eric Larson, I think all four were talking, and they're at a dinner, and they basically said, like, you know, it's like, it sucks, it's like, what, like, you guys, how you operate, because how Malibu operated their business was, all the creators had partial rights to pretty much everything, and, yeah. Like, everyone was fine and happy. I mean, Malibu's not really a thing anymore, but there's more into that later, but, so... That idea was sparked, like, hey, why don't we just create our own studio, like our own company?
Yeah.
Which was fucking crazy thing at the time. So they went to the head of Marvel at the time, the editor of Marvel at the time, and basically said, like, we're leaving. We're quitting. It wasn't, they didn't give an ultimatum, like, hey, pay us more, because those talks were over. So it was essentially like, we're going to do our own thing. We're going to be your competition now. And the reason they said it, like, and Jim Lee was the one who kind of spearheaded this thing. He said, like, we're just kind of warning you that take care of your creators or more people will leave. And so this came to be known as the Exodus.
Because X-Men
books. Yeah, because most of them were on X-Men titles. And the funny thing is they also went to DC, even though they didn't work there, and they told DC the same thing, like, hey, we're leaving Marvel. We just want you to know, if you don't want this shit to happen to you too... You need to pay your creators well. You need to actually, like, invest in them. Don't take them for granted. And it's kind of because of that warning that during this whole era, when it came to creators' rights, DC was a little bit better because they kind of understood, like, oh, shit, okay, we don't want to get fucked over. Also, you had the whole, the big Superman shit going on with, like, the rights who were there owed to and stuff. And so they kind of got on the ball earlier. And then you had the Jack Kirby stuff happen.
So... I read somewhere that the head of Marvel or whatever, one of the the president, whatever he is, said something like the creators and artists and writers that we hire shouldn't be focused on themselves. They should be more focused on the characters.
Yeah.
Or something so close to that, right?
Yeah, it was... See, it's interesting because it was during this period of, like when... This is after Jim Shooter was already gone, but during the Shooter era, it was kind of established that we tell stories about characters and characters come first. Characters are important. That's not to say there wasn't, like you know, you had Blake Walt Simonson, you had John Byrne, you had all these really good creators, Frank Miller, but at the same time, there was this big push of, like, we have all these legendary characters. Let's push the hell out of that. And while these creators that listed were pretty popular, they weren't at the level that, at least in the public side, that Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld got to, because when the 90s came, out of nowhere, like, the names all of a sudden became more important than the characters. It wasn't just like, man, yeah, Walt Simonson's Thor is great, but it's like, he writes a really good Thor. It was just like, oh man, Jim Lee's art is so fucking amazing.
I don't know if it's like, just because I know you or something, but to me, I've always known the name Todd McFarlane. I've always known Liefeld. Like,
but I think that's sort of like growing up with the internet. It's like kind of like if you've hung around places where they talk about comics or like anything like that, those names are kind of known.
Yeah,
Liefeld more now is a joke. Jim Lee, known as like the cool DC guy, and then Todd McFarlane, Spawn, obviously,
And toys,
and McFarlane toys and collectibles and all that sports stuff, and Mark McGuire's baseballs and so. Yeah, that was the whole thing. It's like, you're not paying us merchandising rights. You're not giving us the money we think we deserve. So they walked, and they made a deal with Malibu because, of course, they didn't have, like, any of the infrastructure to publish, to promote. And so then Malibu worked on an idea for about a year. Malibu helped publish, helped promote, took care of, like, all that end of the business.
Yeah.
And they created what was called Image Comics. And the idea with Image, it had, its philosophy was two-pronged. And it was, Image would not own any creator's work, only the creator would. So it was 100% creator rights to, if you created a character, a team, whatever, it was yours and it belonged to you. Which later would bite some of them in the ass. Especially Todd McFarlane. I'll get into that. And then no Image partner would interfere creatively or financially with any other partner's work. Image itself would own no intellectual property except the company trademarks, its name, and its logo. So essentially what it was this big, just giant umbrella corporation. And each person had just their own shit. And, like,
it's like you had, like, the best... You had these titans just kind of coming together and saying, we're all going to make our own shit, and it's going to be a good time.
And so they did this thing where they each launched their own studio within Image. So I'm going to do a quick rundown of each person, each of the founders, the comic that came from, and then what the comic they're known for, and then their line that they had. So, so first of all, you had Rob Liefeld, the X-Force artist. So for those who don't know Rob Liefeld, pouches, gritty teeth. He sort of encapsulates that 90s style.
Yeah,
like of when people say the 90s is bad and extreme, they're talking about Rob Liefeld usually.
Head socks.
No people not drawing feet. Too many guns. Guns that don't even look like guns. He's
big, muscly. And I know that we're talking about comics, but his muscly men are very muscly.
Yeah. His stuff is crazy and it's out there.
A lot of scowling,
yes,
open mouths, and
super anatomy, very fucking weird. He was self-taught.
If you've seen that image of Captain America, where he's...
Looks like he's got big boobs.
Yeah, that's Rob Liefeld.
And there's tons of memes about him. And nowadays, he's kind of a nice guy, and he helps, like, he's back with Image. And
talks with you on Twitter a lot.
And he
likes responding.
Yeah, and he helps publish... things on his line at Image Comics, and he's actually kind of a decent guy now. In his younger years, there were some problems, but so he came from X-Force, which was fucking huge. Cable created Deadpool, and so his first title he launched was Youngblood, so that was his.
Yeah.
There's a big giant rock guy, and it's like everything looks derivative, like from Marvel. It's like, but It sold well enough. And I mean, it sold extremely well. That's the thing. All these Image comics sold well as fuck. Like, they sold hugely, which we'll get into why the speculator boom got even worse because of them. So his studio is called Extreme Studios. What else would it be called? And their main three things they published were Glory, Prophet, and Supreme. Supreme...
These are cool names to me, by the
Supreme
way.
Supreme became kind of huge because Alan Moore was writing.
Yeah.
And by the way, Alan Moore did work with Image Comics. And Supreme was one of the titles that, like, really saw benefit from that. So that was Rob Liefeld's end of the spectrum. And his comics tend to be more, like, superhero, like, super edgy based.
Yeah.
And they were extreme. Then you have Eric Larson, who came from Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. This is Savage Dragon, right?
Yes, and so he launched Savage Dragon, which is this along with Spawn, but Savage Dragon is the comic out of all the series that still ongoing and still has the most issues out of any Image
series.
And he's
still the one working on it.
Still writing it and drawing it.
That's pretty cool.
Whereas Spawn, Todd McFarlane, like, stopped, like, after, like, a couple hundred issues, like, 100, after issue 100 or somewhere on there. And he's come back every now and then, but, Savage Dragon is still rolling. His was called Highbrow Entertainment. That was his publishing thing. And it was mostly for Savage Dragon and occasionally, like, the spinoffs from Savage Dragon, but they also did some Ninja Turtle stuff and other licensed, like, little things. But yeah, so Eric Larson, probably, I wouldn't say the most successful, but when it comes to Image, probably the most, like, the trooper of the group, because he's stuck with it, like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, McFarlane has too, but McFarlane, arguably, well, let's talk about him next, because Todd McFarlane came from Spider-Man. And
his Spider-Man I associate with the 90s because
the big eyes.
Yeah, because I remember in Marvel vs. Capcom, it always seemed like they were basing that and Venom off of like his drawings.
He's not the first to draw Spider-Man big eyes, but like the
really, I associate that with him.
Yeah, but the crazy angular look, the weird ass acrobatics, like the strange poses, and the style of webbing. Although,
did he create Carnage?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
But he was, this era of Spider-Man was huge, so him and Larson was amazing, he was in Spider-Man, and so he created Spawn, which for a while in the 90s was one of the biggest fucking properties, to the point where it got a cartoon on HBO.
Actually, that's the one thing I want to bring up, a lot of these things, I'm surprised, they jump cross-platform kind of quickly, a lot more quicker than I'd expect.
Well, there's a reason, and we'll get into that.
Like this, Max.
Yeah. But so he created Todd McFarlane Productions, and really it's much like Eric Larson's, where it just focused on that character and spinoffs, and occasionally did others, like it licensed and reprinted The Crow and did a lot of Kiss comics for some reason.
Yeah.
Todd McFarlane's main thing though was he used this as a jumping off point to start his toy company, McFarlane Toys.
Really well detailed.
Yes, and. They used to be, like, at the fucking top of the toy game, but now it's, like...
Other people have kind of come up and taken...
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of just now just collector statues, kind of. Well, statue toys. They're not really high-end statues. They're just toys with, like, little articulation that I kind of don't like. But, I mean,
At the time, they look cool. When basically no one else was putting out good toys, it was...
And like, now you look back at the toys and, like, why do they all look like everyone's covered in dirt? But that was how you knew it was, like, detailed. It's like, look, they got grime. So then you have Jim Lee, arguably the most famous and the most, like, successful out of all these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom McFarlane can be, but it's like, he's got his one thing. Jim Lee, like, he's kind of become a bigger than a legend. So he was working on X-Men, which was a fucking huge, him and Chris Claremont. And Chris Claremont was supposed to join this exodus, but... He ended up going to DC, but so he.
What did you write for DC?
A bunch of shitty titles no one cares about. Cool. Essentially, it's nothing. Nothing that's.
Even that's a shame because I love what I've read of his.
Well, and he quickly went back to Marvel after so.
Okay.
But yeah, so he launched Wildcats.
That had a cartoon.
It was supposed to have a cartoon. Oh, no, it did. Youngblood was supposed to have a cartoon.
Yeah.
Wildcats actually did have a cartoon that lasted, I think, like, 22 episodes.
Yeah.
And had a lot of toys. Well, all these things pretty much had toys. And his arm of production was called Wildstorm Productions, which specialized in Stormwatch and Gen 13. Wildstorm eventually was sold to DC, became publisher of Wildstorm, working, and now he's been working at DC ever since, and he's, like, now high position at DC, and he's, like...
Well, he designed all those characters for the New 52, right?
Yeah, he did.
He designed a lot of them.
Him and Cully Hammer designed a lot of them.
I'm not saying those were good, but I'm saying they put a lot of trust
in him. Jim Lee's a good artist, but a shit designer.
Okay.
That's always been my opinion of him. It's like, if you want someone who's really good at art, yeah, Jim Lee's fucking fantastic, but if you want someone to design shit, do not get him, because he's stuck in the 90s.
He drew Hush, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's stuck in the 90s when it comes to design, though. He likes putting amulets on people's heads. He likes high collars.
I was literally just thinking of katanas.
He likes pouches still. Yeah. He likes tactical gear. Yeah. But, so he sold Stormont. He stole Wildstorm. And for a while, they were pretty, like, big in the game, like Authority, Planetary, all that stuff. Now they've kind of collapsed. Wildstorm doesn't really exist. There's a new thing called The Wildstorm, but... The company they were, it's pretty much gone. It's been absorbed, essentially, into DC.
And those characters are running around in...
Not anymore.
Oh, really?
It's like, well, I don't know. It's like, it's... With Rebirth, it's kind of hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them have gone back to their own sort of world.
Okay.
So, then you have Mark Silvestri, who came from Wolverine. He launched Cyberforce, and his company was Top Cow Productions, which specialized in The Darkness and Witchblade. And later on, they did a lot more critically acclaimed type of stuff. They at one point left Image. He pulled out his stake and was just like, Top Cow's gonna be its own thing. This has a lot to do with Rob Liefeld and what he did, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And then you have Jim Valentino, who was on Guardians of the Galaxy at the time, and back then Guardians was the original team, and took place in the future. You had Starhawk and all those characters.
The guys from the end of the second movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Martin Nix and stuff like that. And his thing was Shadowhawk, and his line was called Shadowline. Shadowline didn't really produce much. He did, like, a biographical comic about himself.
It's kind
of
weird.
But Shadowhawk was probably the lowest selling of all these ones. And then this one, it's interesting, because, okay, so Wiles Portacio, who was the last person asked to even join this whole cabal, if you want to call it that. He came from Uncanny X-Men, and his whole thing was Wetworks, which kept getting delayed over and over and over. And he already had a studio called Homage, but that's kind of what they wanted. They're like, hey, well, you already have experience with this. His sister got sick, and because of that, he pulled out, like, really early from any of this. So he while he's considered a founder, he's not, like, 100%.
Yeah.
Now we get to Rob Liefeld.
So what did he do?
Well, he was appointed as CEO of Image Comics.
Makes sense.
And the idea was no one interferes with anyone. No one interferes with anyone's line. They don't tell them what to publish. They don't do whatever. Well, here's the thing. Rob Liefeld had another publishing company separate from Image called Maximum Press. And it was found out that Rob Liefeld was stealing artists from everyone's lines, trying to get them put on Maximum Press, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, dude? That's
like,
not cool.
Like, this is supposed to be our thing, and like, you're, on top of that, there's like some embezzling things that happened, some like unfair shady deals, and Rob Liefeld was the youngest of all these guys. He was like in his early 20s, and since then he's sort of learned.
You got too much power.
Yeah, so eventually what happened is they kicked him out.
He got fired.
Well, they were going to kick him out, and he, it depends on who you ask, either he got fired, or he left willingly,
it's one of those situations.
Yeah, but now because everyone's, like, buddy-buddy and good friends now, they're not gonna say what the truth is, but, eventually he would return years later, but, yeah, he was, like, this, this pissed off Silvestri so much that he was, like, I don't want any involvement with this. I'm going to take Top Cow and leave. And so this happened when the speculator boom, the bubble burst. So here's what happened. Image, when they launched at the time, they got so much press. Even the news was covered. Like, the fucking nightly news was covering them. Mainstream news is talking about them.
That's pretty crazy.
And each first issue that was released was, like, fucking huge. The problem is, these guys were just artists. They weren't business people.
Yeah.
So, titles kept getting delayed. they would take like 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year between issues. But they still would sell it crazy because, again, it's a speculation boom. During the speculation boom, people would be buying 30 of each issue, 30 copies of each issue, because they had it in their head, okay, if I buy all this in a few years, it'll be worth millions. Not understanding how the reasoning old comics were worth so much is because there was a scarcity. There wasn't that many around. That's why they were worth so much. So what happened was comic book shops in the industry, based on supply and demand, it was like, shit, people are buying, like, okay, let's keep producing more, let's keep pumping out more. So Marvel, DC, all the companies, specifically Marvel and Image, were pushing so much product, like pushing product constantly. Marvel, all these minis, all these special editions. And the reason why they started to, like, go insane and do a lot is because Image, because all their main titles were behind, Image needed to stay afloat. So they kept pushing out all these crazy new gimmicks, and then Marvel would copy them. And then it became sort of a war of one-upping each other.
Well, what kind of gimmicks would you say? Like, just...
The Mylar bag craze, or it's like, this comic is special because it's in a Mylar bag. You can't see the cover.
Okay, I remember that.
There's a special edition trading card in here. There's a POG in here. There's glow-in-the-dark, special glow-in-the-dark covers. Die-cut covers where it's like, you lift the cover and then it's like a different image underneath it.
These are things that don't show up anymore, I've noticed. Not really.
Not true.
Not as much, though.
It's starting to creep in. Whoa. Because of Marvel. Because Marvel is shady with their tactics of trying to be number one, even though they keep falling short now.
That's so weird.
Yeah. They make retailers order, like, 200 copies of a certain comic so they can get a variant cover. And it's usually a comic that's not selling well. And then it's like, well, if you want the special cover of Avengers, you're going to...
Didn't they do the same thing with those Lantern Rings also?
They said if you scrap the Lantern Rings, we'll give you the special cover of Deadpool. Yeah, it's...
Oh, no, that was DC. I'm stupid, sorry.
It's dirty tactics. Everyone has them. But Marvel lately has been, like, upping them. They sell millions to Scholastic. And then they say, see, this copy sold a million. And it's like... No, you sold to Loot Crate or Scholastic, and now you're claiming that's how much the comic sold, and it's like,
yeah.
You just made a deal with them. But so back then, though, Image was just fucking slaying like crazy, and also because Malibu was, at the time, was part of them in the beginning, they had Malibu's coloring, and their coloring was digital, so it's like Marvel had like still the traditional style, and Marvel was like, fuck, like, you know, what are we gonna do? So they fucking bought up, like, random little companies, and everyone was fucking... It was like Game of Thrones type shit. Everyone was fucking each other over. Everyone was trying to get to the top. Image, because of... The thing that needs to be understood is that Marvel... Superstar artists were what were selling comics, along with gimmicks. Marvel had a bunch of artists, but not all of them were superstars. When you have a company like Image, where every single artist is a superstar... Every single title is going to sell fucking amazing at the time. And so this caused, like it was an arms race. Well, after a few years, when speculators started realizing, wait, these things aren't worth anything. Well, what happened was, they left. Like, most of the speculators weren't comic fans. They were like soccer moms and random dads and businessmen who were just like, I'm going to get in rich quick.
Yeah.
Some of them did get rich quick because they pulled out early. They were like, I'm selling these all back and I'm getting fucking a gorillion dollars.
A well-known number.
So then what happens is you have all these... By the way, in the 90s, comic shops, holy shit, so many had opened. So you have all these startup businesses... all these comic shops that were at one point, like, whatever, but now all of a sudden they're making tons of money. You have a bunch of publishers, you have Diamond Distributors, you have all these other distribution wings that now have been killed because Marvel decided, we're going to make sure there's only one distributor and that's for us. Yeah, it was messy. Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, I recommend that book. It goes more into that whole mess. And now Marvel kind of pretty much created the direct market we see today.
Cool.
But so what happened was, once the bubble burst, once people stop buying comics, because they're like, these aren't worth shit. And it's like, and you had fans who were like, the stories are fucking awful because they're like, because at this point, it was just like, the story didn't matter. Art, the art mattered, and the art was fucking hideous. But the Extreme was in at the time. But fans who wanted good stories that they experienced in the 80s and the 70s were just like, what the fuck? What is this shit? And that was it. The bubble burst. Shops overnight went under because they had so much product. They had dozens and dozens of issues of the same book that weren't moving. There was tons of Image books everywhere, and it was like, we can't sell these. To the back issue bins they went, to some a lot of shops closed down.
That's why, like, whenever you go to, like, a comic shop and you look at the long boxes,
you will see 90s comics for sure.
Yeah.
Everything from, like, 93 up until, like, 1998, maybe 2001.
Everyone's always looking for, like, a rare comic. By the way, if you ever, like...
Yeah.
You always see the one guy looking through, like, X-Men
or Spider-Man. Or people are trying to complete their collections. Like, there's...
Yeah, and like, that's fine.
But that happened, and Image, Marvel, and Diamond are kind of to blame for it, but Image... While Marvel started this, Image sort of carried the torch, and, like, it was just a gigantic arms race. And so what happened after that was, you know, Marvel almost went bankrupt. It got really fucking bad. Thankfully, Joe Quesada sort of saved the day with his Marvel Knights imprint and pushing storytelling first. Bill Jamis, for all his mistakes, kind of helped right the ship. As far as Image, though, there was a period in time where they were kind of just, like, floating around. I mean, they had these multiple imprints. It's like, you know, Top Cow was separate from them, but, like, they were doing, like, Witchblade and stuff. Spawn was still selling whatever, but it was nowhere near the levels they had been previously. And it humbled a lot of them. And so Jim Valentino was put in charge of Image Comics, and he sort of, like, he streamlined shit. It was his idea in the first place to get a talent manager who would sort of make everyone be on schedule. And so from, like, the late 90s, maybe, like, 97 to, like, 2001, it was pretty much, like, a zombie company where it was just, like, they're putting stuff out. Occasionally they have, like, a hit that would, like, be part of another imprint from Image, like Rising Stars, you know, like, Battle Chasers and stuff like that, but it was nowhere where it was. But Image story gets interesting. Nowadays, Image Comics is kind of known as the, like you were saying, the indie company.
Yeah.
So
if you want to get a comic out there, you should want to, you know.
Yeah.
You want to be on Image. I mean, that's always been my understanding.
The reason for that, like, so now if you want, like, to have a...
Like, cred, I guess?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and money. Well, I mean, you'd want to be on Image.
Image is kind of known for... It's like what Vertigo used to be for DC.
Yeah.
I
always kind of... It's weird. I always, like, looked at them as, like, very similar companies. Like...
Yeah. It wasn't until 2003 that The Walking Dead, which most people will know, came out. And it was a sleeper hit at first, but then out of nowhere, the rave reviews and the critical acclaim, it exploded. And so for the first time in forever, all of a sudden, there was an Image comic, not about superheroes, not about, like, mercenaries, not about, like, crazy sci-fi killers and shit like that, and, like, that was selling like fucking hotcakes. And then after Invincible was launched, also by Robert Kirkman, and then it's like, wait, Image is doing fun superhero comics? This was during the time when, like, Marvel was and DC were both kind of getting grim and gritty with their super stuff again. Very realistic because of, like, the success of Authority and shit like that. And so then you had this, like, fun superhero fair, and it put Image back on the map. And then from there, they started hiring tons of new talent to do things like Chew, Morning Glories, The Manhattan Project's Saga by Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah. And they started, like, cultivating, like, a lot of actual talent that wasn't... It was less focused on, like, look how crazy and good this art is. And it was more just, like, we have stuff that's, like, actually, like, telling a pretty decent story where, like, we're trying to get a message across. Our main thing is quality. And nowadays, Image is associated with quality, like, quality work.
So, like, when I talk to people that are... I don't want to use the word hipster, but I guess that would mm-hmm. be the... They kind of look down on Marvel and DC.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And they tend to look at Image like yeah.
People right. who love indie comics tend to hate Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
I happen to like both.
Yeah.
I think there's room for everything. Superheroes are kind of looked down on unless it's like an alternate, like, sort of weird take.
Like Invincible.
Yeah, I mean, but see, Invincible is like, it's basic superhero flair. I mean, it's like, it's pretty bloody at times. But it's different. It's not like... what people were used to. It's not like here's it's not Batman or the X-Men or it's something else. So Eric Stevenson took over from Eric Larson around when it was in the 2000s. It was like in the mid late 2000s, and this is when the push for like stuff like Saga was happening and Chew, and like the idea was like, we're gonna make critically acclaimed books. We're gonna be very careful about this.
Scalped also, right?
No, that's Vertigo.
Oh,
Jason Aaron Sculpt. But see, here's the thing. When this stuff started becoming popular, all of a sudden you had all the other indie publishers, or, you know, like, Dark Horse and Vertigo even, trying to sort of, like, right the ship of, like, okay, let's try to be in on this.
That's where stuff like Sculpt comes in and all.
Yeah, because there was this big resurgence of, like, the industry was now just, it was no more stagnation. It was like, okay, we can finally have, like, really good talent. We can, like, actually, like, try to find writers who are going to do something different and new and interesting. And for a while, it was going that way with Image. But more recently, there's kind of been a problem with the success of The Walking Dead as a TV series. We're entering this phase where, and it's happened with a lot of comic book companies, because of The Walking Dead being such a success and because of all these comic book properties being made to television shows, now the focus seems to be more on how can we get this, like, let's publish comics that can be eventually adapted.
Yeah.
And you're seeing this happen more and more. And a lot of people who were, like, in this from the mid to late 2000s era are kind of like, well, what the fuck? Like, we were having lots of, like, original ideas, and now it's just, like, these books are clearly being written as, like,
it's like, we're looking for the next big thing, but we don't want to, like, make it too, like, Saga, I don't know if that's
Saga was before that whole
thing. Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like, I don't know if that's something that you could easily just throw onto, like, a TV show.
That was optioned, and that's the thing. After The Walking Dead hit it big, almost overnight, you had all these things being optioned for movies or television. 30 Days of Night, which is by IDW, that also got optioned fast as fuck.
Well, that became a movie, right?
It did, and it actually became a movie, and then two other, like, video-on-demand type movies. But that's where we're kind of at now with Image, is like, okay, you guys got The Walking Dead, most of your series that were kind of acclaimed are kind of ending or, like, about to end or now are, like... And it's a sad thing to say. Once a lot of certain comics, when they started getting movie options and shit, a lot of the creators kind of were just like, well, I'll do this every now and then, I guess. And so you have, like, weird shipping schedules, and it's like, okay, so what's more important is now it's, like, movies and television. It's like, now comics... in this indie sort of world of I call it the second tier indie world, because first tier indie world is like, it's the true indie, like Fantagraphics and stuff, where it's people just like, they barely make any money, but they're just like, we're just putting out comics. It's like an IP farm. It's like, yeah. Image is kind of an IP farm now, and it's like, it kind of sucks because they were sort of leading this way for like, look, here's how comics can be. It's like, you know,
you're just saying it's like, it's kind of just become another cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
In the machine.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because it's what's happening has happened before with Image, because when Image started the whole thing, of course, like creator rights and all the shit and like treating people fairly. I mean, but by the second year they were operating, a lot of the, like, Eric Larson didn't do this, and Mark Silvestri didn't, but a lot of them were just fucking hiring people and making them work for hire, and it was like, and they're giving them shitty contracts, and it was like, you guys became exactly what you fucking hated.
Yeah.
Which Image, in 2003 to, like, I want to say 2000, maybe 13 or 2010, they were finally becoming like, hey, you guys are an actual really good alternative. You're not like Vertigo, where Vertigo is like, people don't own like 100% of their shit unless it's in their contract. You guys are actually doing something new. You're making a difference in comics. And now it's like, you guys have kind of become what you hated. It's like you're an IP farm, and like, you just care about making movies and,
yeah, because they already had a Spawn movie, a cartoon.
Yeah, but that was early on. But now it's just like almost every major Vertigo thing, not Vertigo, almost every major Image thing has been optioned. And people are just waiting for, like, when am I going to get my movie?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's kind of sad. So, I mean, there's still, like, some titles that are, like, trying to push boundaries. But it's rare. And the other problem is, lately, a lot of their stuff is, like, established names. It's like, before it was like, hey, we can build talent here. And now it's kind of like, oh, here's someone who wrote fucking Avengers.
Now yeah, Mark Millar was doing something like that, right?
No, Millar, he has a line that's Marvel helps with it.
Okay.
Not Epic. I forgot what the name of it is, but... like, it's weird. A lot of creators have these deals with, like, big publishers. But, yeah, they're using, like, established talent. It's like, why are you spotlighting people who are already established? Like, let them do their shit on their... Like, it kind of... Like, Kirkman was kind of a fresh face when he launched The Walking Dead. And now he's a partner in Image. Like, he's the only person, aside from the original founders, that is a partner. Because if he put them back on the map.
He's kind of like one of those rock star writers, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's on TV and shit. People know who he is.
Yeah. Some people say that might have affected how he writes comics.
Do you feel that way? Because I've...
With The Walking Dead, I feel like it's a zombie comic. And I mean that in the sense that...
yes.
In the literal sense, in the fact that it's like, this thing is just on autopilot. He's just fucking going through the motions, like...
Because it's like, with that, I mean, it's like, it's always like we said, it was like, oh, we find a new society, oh, there's something fucked up about it, yeah. Zombies invade, and then we gotta find something new.
So, yeah, but it's, Image Comics, I wouldn't say that they're completely trash or anything. They're just, this big giant boom of superhero IPs. I mean, it's hard not to, like, want to, like, capitalize on that.
Yeah.
So,
and with The Walking Dead, it just makes sense.
Yeah, and but that's the thing. It's like, not many of these things have been licensed yet. I know they've been licensed, but they haven't been made. Because, like, I mean, but with the success of course, The Walking Dead, then you have, like, I guess Preacher. God damn it. horrible adaptation. Who knows? Maybe we'll be seeing Chu soon, or maybe we'll be seeing Saga. But we're not going to see, like, Savage Dragon anytime soon.
No.
I mean, the licensing boom of the original Image characters, that shit's not coming back. I mean, they did what they could at the time, and now it's, like, it's kind of passe. So there's a few comments I have. Not many, because most of them are just like, wow, remember when this was cool? Or people don't really like talking about modern Image. They just like talking about how Spawn was cool or Spawn was shit, so... Let's start with Jim. Big comic fan. He's been on the show before. He's our editor-in-chief. He's head writer, all that stuff. So
El Jeffy, as I call him.
El Jeffy. In the beginning of the 90s vomited out every cliche the comics industry had going. That vomit was called Image Comics. While Image was a great idea in the beginning, it was still mostly the same old shit, just with different characters. Eventually, as time went on, they started to get some good. Now we find ourselves in the Kirkman era, where storytelling is first over the 90s art. I don't even know what I'm saying at this point, since I barely woke up, but fuck all that 90s BS.
I guess, I mean, you haven't sounded off on those designs that much. I know you're
They're fucking awful. I mean, Spawn has like a weird corset thing that no one ever fucking talks about. It looks like he's wearing like a ladies corset or bustier sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, oh, and when I was want to quickly address about Spawn and Neil Gaiman and Todd McFarlane.
Oh,
Todd McFarlane did some unscrupulous shit where, so again, if you create a character for Image, this was back in the day, you own said character.
Yeah.
Well, Neil Gaiman wrote some Spawn issues, created Angela, and it's his character. Todd McFarlane didn't see it that way.
Because it was on his comic.
Yeah, and it was like, no, you motherfucker, this is mine. And then Miracle Man got mixed up in this, and Neil Gaiman was supposed to be writing some more Miracle Man, because the whole The Golden Age thing happened with the Alan Moore story of Miracle Man, then it's his turn, and then the rights from CC Beck were stolen, and Todd McFarlane then bought them out, but it turns out he didn't actually buy the rights, and he was just unscrupulously using them. And so then, what's funny is Neil Gaiman raised a fund to sue Todd McFarlane to get the rights back to Angela, to throw it into space, because he was going to sell it to Marvel. And to do that with Marvel, he had to work on 1602 and a few other Marvel projects. This was all to get Miracle Man back. Well, it turns out in the end, Todd McFarlane didn't own Miracle Man, so this was all done for fucking nothing, essentially.
Jesus.
And CC Beck got screwed over. That's the basic story. CC Beck got screwed over.
You can't do that to Neil
Gaiman. And now it turns out that there might be some rights issues again, and that's why Marvel kind of stopped publishing the Miracle Man stuff they were doing for a while. So, yeah, it's a big mess. But basically, Todd McFarlane, like Rob Liefeld, got really greedy. So, okay.
Back to Colin. Thanks, Todd.
Okay, they saw the potential to trademark it and now dominate it. Even their lesser series do good because the $9.99 price of all first volumes. Yeah. When it comes to trade paperbacks, yeah, Image is fucking great with them. Every first trade paperback is $10, and then it goes up from there. But
and they look great too.
Yeah, that's the thing with Image Comics, has always been their production quality. They're one of the first comics, like, and Malibu as well, to do glossy paper, to better coloring, better ink, everything. And so their TPBs are pretty good. All right. Most of their books in the '90s were fucking garbage, outside of a few like Savage Dragon and The Max. In recent years, they've become fucking amazing, though. Yeah, those early years, if you look back, there's some interesting, like The Max, Pit.
Max had an interesting cartoon.
Yeah. Jeff Parker's Bone was actually on one of the Image imprints. Yeah, like, there's some gems in there, but yeah, the early 90s were fucking awful. Spawn was and will always be the best. Fight me. Yeah.
I also had one. Youngblood number one managed to have 6 people on the cover and hide all of their feet. I find that weirdly impressive.
Yeah, that's Liefeld for you.
Another one. Liefeld doesn't know a body from a tank. I'm glad his man-loving ass got fired. By the way, some of these are a bit off-color. I'll try to...
Shadowhawk should have been Image's mascot. Fuck Spawn. The Shadowhawk fans are passionate.
Yeah. Spawn to me is like... I don't care about him, but he has a more iconic look.
For the time.
Yeah.
I think now he looks like... I mean, they try to update him, but yeah. Okay. When exactly did Image change from extreme style comics to what we have today? And someone tries to answer that. Probably when Jim Lee sold Waltz from DC. I can't remember when did the Authority or Stormwatch finally peter out, and for the matter, when Vertigo started losing ground and Dark Horse started being the Hellboy company. That's when Image started to become the glossy, sexy nerd comics they are today. And someone else says, it was a slow evolution. Liefeld left in 96 and then 97 when they started rolling out tons of small comics from unknowns and hoping something would stick. Except it wasn't until Kirkman that any of these gambles paid off, and the rest of the 90s and early 2000s, they were still extreme. Yeah, I mean, they like I said, they were a zombie corporation for a while, just pushing out comics and nothing really hit. And then Kirkman came along and it was like, oh, shit. Yeah, and then Dark Horse was a big competition, but then they became like kind of the Hellboy comics, and then it was just like, okay, we're just doing Hellboy shit. So, let's see. For a few years, Image was on a serious tear, snapping up big name talent left and right. Not sure what happened, but it feels they've plateaued for the last couple of years. All the hype that was behind the Image is gone. Yeah, I mean, once they hit it big in television, it was just like we have like, I think Orcstain is also with them. It was just like, well, we got our important IPs. We're going to make movies, so... I mean, they still release stuff like Tokyo Ghost, I think, is one of the things. They, and
Wayward
like,
looks interesting.
Yeah, they have a bunch of shit, but Dr. Mirage, I think. Yeah, so we'll see.
Okay. Does Image only give books to established names now? It seems like they don't even take risks.
I see where you were in the same thread I was.
Yes. That's the only one I took from that thread.
Okay, yeah. So don't worry. I think someone responded to that.
Well, that was like the last one I saw. In
A bunch of people. I didn't even write that one down. Interesting.
Okay.
So yeah, the idea is that it sucks, but you know, actually, that plays into a comment I have. Oh no, I did write that down. So here are the responses.
Okay.
They still regularly put out books, but the books by I wrote for X-Men for 2 years get more hype. And then, but here's an actual interesting response. You have to pay them to distribute your book. It's basically a scam, and they only approve fantasy sci-fi pitches. They're as bad as the big two when it comes to actual diversity of product. So in recent years, it's like now if you want to pitch them, it has to be fantasy or sci-fi, and you do have to pay for them to publish your shit.
That's weird. I mean,
but
I get it.
The idea is that you do that, and then if you're paying for publishing, but everything else, like marketing and shit, they do, and you see more money out of that because you're being published by Image.
Yeah, and it's a good name to
but
have.
You're taking a risk. Like, you're taking... I love it. This episode's so extreme with all these sounds in the background.
It's an extreme episode about an extreme imprint, so...
Yeah, like, you're really? Really garbage? Fucking. It's garbage day. you're taking a risk, and it pays off sometimes, and... But then you have a lot of people who are getting into Image because they're like, wait, I can have this published? Oh, shit, I'm going to get a movie deal. I'm going to get a movie option, a TV show.
So, like, to me, it's like, I understand that's cool that, you know, it's like everyone wants a movie made. I mean, but I kind of feel like that shouldn't be your end game.
That's the problem, though, is like you have a lot of people writing for comics who don't care about comics. They're writing for comics to get a better job.
Yeah.
And it's like, because it's seen as easy money, it's like, just for fucking comics, I could write all these explosions in the background. It's like, yeah, I can easily make money and easily, you know, get a movie made, and it'll get optioned. I'll get a cool $6 million signing bonus. Just do this. Do you have any more?
Yeah. All right. Who wants to draw my comic idea? It's like Batman meets Iron Man. Let's get this shit rolling so we can fuck fat blunts and smoke hot women.
That's interesting.
Do you think that, like... Because there's a... Well, I gotta ask you, since you are the artist.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's always concern for being, like, taken advantage of? Like, I'm gonna write all this crazy shit.
Oh, of course.
And then it's like, you have to draw everything, and then, like...
No, that happens all the time. That's why contracts are important. That's why if you're going to actually make a comic with someone, everyone is on equal ground. It's really important. People get taken advantage of all the time. And a lot of smaller publishers like to do the whole pay with exposure. Like
what is that?
They don't pay you money. What they do is they're like, hey, it's good exposure.
So. Oh, so it's like that guy that does all the freelance work and he posts the stupid... things that people tell them, like, oh, you can put it on your resume. Like,
yeah, Blue Water Comics does this shit a lot, where they're like, you draw the entire issue, but like, hey, we're not going to pay you, but, you know, you'll get a lot of exposure. And the truth is, no, you fucking don't, because it's shitty product, no one fucking wants to actually buy this, and the people who do buy it, they don't give a fuck who the artist is, they're just like, there's got sexy girls, and I like that. Or it's a George Bush comic, or it's Sarah Palin. It's like they don't. No one's gonna farm you out and be like, "Oh man, we gotta hire this guy." What people will hire you for will be if you put out a really fucking good product. Like if you self publish too, like Brian Bendis got where he is because of that.
Yeah.
That notion's bullshit. So, all right. Do you have any more? Because I have one more.
Imagine if they could make a comic that actually makes money.
Huh.
So, what I am kind of curious about is, like, between, like, all, like, you have your Walking Dead, obviously,
yeah.
And then you have, you know, all your other ones. Like, Is it lucrative enough? I mean, do they all sell, like, okay.
They all sell well enough, but, I mean, it's weird. They sell well enough to get you for, like, more jobs, and eventually, like, a lot of these people, either they want to work for Marvel or DC, so they start there, or they want to get their shit, like, made to shows or whatever. But yeah, I mean, they sell well enough, but you have to keep making your own product.
So, okay, so you have to pay them to... Okay,
publish.
So, okay,
pay them to publish.
You have to make your comic, obviously. So you have to pay them to publish. You have to pay for...
Publishing. It's paying the publisher.
Okay.
But everything else they cover, and you will probably hopefully get money back.
Yeah.
The sound effect episode... By the way, I'm the one adding these.
Just the water cooler conversation.
The beeps, the crazy metal bars falling. It's a weird thing. I mean, you're taking a definitely big risk, but
yeah.
All right, and the final one. This one's just this one's just kind of sad and hilarious. I remember when Image had a talent search. By then, I was imitating McFarlane and Lee. I got rejected because I was too much of a clone in the sea of clones they already had. They did offer me a background finishing gig, but I was in college and I wanted big bucks as they advertised. Now, this is a dumb person.
Yeah.
He could have gotten his foot in the door.
When was this?
This is in the 90s.
Okay.
He could have gotten his foot in the door as a background finisher, working with pros, and could have made connects. And contacts and eventually become a huge name. But instead he was like, I want to write a big title. I don't want to just do backgrounds. It's like a lot of like cartoonists, if it's not nepotism, it's because they started out like just doing normal shit, cartoonists and shit.
That is kind of depressing. You know what? Sometimes I feel like we fear our own success. Or you really are just a big dumbass.
Obscure Gentleman fun, head over to www.theobscuregentleman.com. And if you'd like to help support this podcast and the webcomic, please visit www.patreon.com/theobscuregentleman. We thank you for listening.